Okay. Here I am sitting under a large acacia tree. I arrived late last night at 11 o'clock, and my tent is to my left, and my computer is sitting out here. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'm just making this broadcast before going back to New Rotterdam for a couple of hours, which is not very far away, in order to oversee a wedding. Indrajumna Maharaj was going to come, but he was too exhausted, so I'm filling in for him, and I'll come back on Padayatra and observe Lord Balaram's appearance day here. Lord Balaram Ji Ki Jai. It was a late night last night. Unbelievably exhausting. We're doing this filming for this television program, and went from 10 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. The real challenging aspect of it was is that I had a script, and Krishna Leela had wanted me to sort of boost up my Hungarian by memorizing the script, but it was 6 pages, so for me to actually memorize words and terminology that I'm not really so familiar with, and then present it as if I'm talking naturally. Anyway, it worked in some places, and I had to ad-lib in others, on top of which we were going to so many different places, the temple we started with, from there going to the apartment in which I lived in Hungary with my family in the 50s, and then going to the bridge where I saw a man being hanged off a lamppost on top of the hill overlooking the city for another interview to Bhakti. It was quite a trip, and then getting back here wasn't very easy either, as the motorway was blocked off and my driver got lost twice trying to find the proper detour. Anyhow, it's nice to be back on Padayatra, and I'll be here until Friday, and trying to prepare also for Rajamandal Parikrama. The main aspect of the preparation is selecting which places to emphasize to the devotees, and figuring out how the whole dynamics of this is going to work. It's a first-off event, and going with 300 devotees is not exactly the easiest way to do the experiment, but it'll be exciting. Okay, here's an interesting question from Chaitanya Charan Devi Dasi down in Devon. And she asks, "You have recently been speaking about the importance of ashram. I realize that just because we are married, we're not necessarily grihastha in the same way a bachelor is not necessarily a brahmachari. What is the position then of a practicing devotee who's married to a non-devotee? Does this situation preclude that devotee from calling themselves grihastha and make them grihamedi? Could you please comment on the difference between those two classifications?" Anyway, it is a very interesting question, particularly because I was so much into trying to work out and establish Varnashram here in Hungary, and spending a lot of time with a lot of devotees on that, and preparing written material as well. But the real rule of thumb here to keep in mind is guna and karma. So Krishna makes that point that things should be identified, the qualities of something should be according to their lakshana, according to their nature, according to guna, according to qualifications, and karma, according to the work. So what is a grihastha? A grihastha is someone who is a Vaishnav householder, or Vaishnav householders. It's not really possible to be a grihastas if only one of the members is just a Vaishnav. It's a joint affair, because it's something that's shared. So grihastha Vaishnavas have the Vaishnav qualities, most important of which is that they're devoted to Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna, serving Krishna. Then in terms of their worldly duties, they either are engaged full-time in temple service, and that's very wonderful, or they're working in an ethical way. They give the results of their work to the Lord. They're not motivated by sense gratification, and of course they follow regulative principles, and then other practices like they don't go to movies, they don't eat in restaurants, they're bound by the real codes of religion. So they have both the nature for that, they're naturally inclined to those things, and they're also doing it karma. When householders don't behave accordingly, then we should see what it is that they are doing. Is someone automatically a grihamedi if, by default, if he's not or she is not a grihasta? Well, take this example that Chaitanya Charan is bringing up. One person may be a devotee, and the husband may be a vegetarian, very kindly disposed to Krishna consciousness, but not a practicing devotee, and not even necessarily a greedy person, someone very much attached to the results of his fruits and making extraordinary plans in order to enjoy the world, but is just satisfied with really what comes naturally. So then you would say, well, they're not necessarily grihamedis because they're not materialists in the growth sense, but they're not grihastas. So what are they? Well, we just have to use the term that they're married, they're householders, and they're somewhere in between. They don't have a defined category by Varnashram standards. The importance of defining the varnas and ashrams, of fitting into one of the varnas and ashrams, because then duties, responsibilities, and rights are very easily established. When one does not fit into the varnashram system, then it's very difficult to establish what their rights are or what their duties are, and things become extremely subjective. Of course, we're living in Kali Yuga. We're not entering into a varnashram system, but we're trying to build it up. So it's to be understood that this dichotomy will exist, and we have to work with it. But still, we should have a very clear concept of what Varnashram is about, and we should accept individuals according to a particular Varna or Ashram on the basis of Guna and Karma, the type of work they do, the type of natures that they possess. Another example, which was an interesting one we were recently talking about with one of our Varnashram subcommittees, was what about youth? And here, for instance, I can give a good example of the Pandava saying. What about those youth who live at home, go to school or college, but they're good Vaishnavas? They chant Hare Krishna maybe 16 rounds, they follow the regulative principles. Are they brahmacharis or brahmacharinis? In our discussion, we came to the conclusion that you can't call them brahmacharis, because the first thing is that Shastra states is brahmachari gurukule vasadanto guru ritan. A brahmachari and a brahmacharini, they live in the gurukula, they dedicate their whole beings for the service of the spiritual master. They go out and they beg, they study the scriptures, they rise early in the morning, they practice austerities and celibacy. So these are the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. And who are the devotees who live at home, work, and so on? They're students. They're devotees who are students, because their guna and karma doesn't really quite jive with what Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita defines as being the actual role of the brahmachari. So just as I had spoken some days earlier about the vanaprastha situation, we need to live our lives and at least develop this art of seeing things according to guna and karma. Yatraya Lakshanam Proktam Lakshana. Not just Varnashram, but what is the qualification of the spiritual master? Who is a spiritual master? Not because of his bearing, not because that he has a certain title, but we should accept on the basis of his work and nature, or his Krishna consciousness and nature, how advanced he is in Krishna consciousness. Is a devotee in Maya? Is he in Krishna consciousness? Guna karma, tell it by guna karma. This is the scientific world that we live in. This is how people also function. How do scientists establish what an element is? They describe its characteristics or qualities. How do they say what a good businessman is? Because he has certain qualities and characteristics. What's supposed to be the ideal politician? Well, he's defined by some characteristics. So for us, Krishna consciousness is also the science of knowing the lakshana, the characteristics of things, people, states of being, and on the basis of that, we can identify something or someone, and then we can have a appropriate expectation from that person, and ensure that their categorical rights are then protected. But unless that definition is clear, then we have false expectations. People expect certain rights which are not theirs because they haven't lived up to them. Or we may hold someone responsible for certain things that they shouldn't be held responsible for because it wasn't their duty in the first place. So, guna karma. That's a good meditation for the day on the auspicious appearance of Lord Balaram.